So he argues there's a move from social and cultural interpretations. Now, the three artists I showed you before wouldn't agree with that. They'd agree that something has changed, but they wouldn't say it's distinct from social and cultural interpretations. But William's concern was that these tend to become more isolated, and they become more specialized and isolated, aesthetics, culture, art, and then we have to resolve this problem. So he argues that modernity splits aesthetic inquiry from social and cultural, and this is the most consistent problem of modernity. And when I mention the utopian aspects nearly always come down to the idea of trying to resolve these and bring them together. The question I was thinking about in this paper is, do we still need to think about the problem the same way, or can we think about this problem differently? Okay. The utopians or the dystopians are really related to this issue. We're bringing the subjective and the objective back together again. And Williams's warning was that you get a drift that in meaning of art, aesthetics, culture, and it's part of the meaning becomes divided from the older definition, which was more collective, more objective, clearly shared, more traditional, and it's part of the divided modern consciousness of art and society. And he said today it's highlighted by the ever greater split of aesthetic from practical or utilitarian utility, questions of how things are practical or functional. What was interesting, what I wanted to try and point out in this essay, is that this argument has been around for a long time. This is not new. Williams wrote it in 1976, the same year Polka was investigating a new idea of, his series, We the Petty Bourgeoisie, was trying to figure out new ideas about art and the social world, and at the same time Williams was fretting that it was all falling apart. When Walter Gropius is the head of the Bauhaus, I mentioned yesterday, right after World War I, he wants to set up a new Bauhaus to bring these things all together again. He argues that the problem for art is that it becomes more specialised, more separate from one another, and we need to bring all the arts together again. So artists, painters, sculptors must recognise it new, see it again, and learn to grasp the composite, the collective character of their work, and then they'll produce this architectonic, this building spirit different to salon art, just as simple exhibitions on their own. And he finishes, the Bauhaus manifesto finishes saying, let us desire, conceive and create the new structure of the future which will one day rise towards heaven from the hand of a million workers like the crystal symbol of a new faith. What he meant by this was the bringing together of these aesthetic fields, the utilitarian and the aesthetic together, will have this great social purpose. Okay, it'll achieve this great harmony. And this is what I meant, is that there's been this constant search for modernism unleashes these productive tensions, and there's always been this idea that we can pull them together and unify them. And this was Gropius's vision. It's exactly the same argument as Williams's one in 1976, but in 1919. They're all separate, they're all subjective, let's make them collective and objective again. Okay? So the cathedral idea was this idea of bringing together Bauhaus literally means bringing in the medieval idea of art, the medieval worker, the traditional idea of the artist, but bringing them in with industrial technology so that these two things would be brought together. So you have the Gothic cathedral, but a more abstract version of it as the cover for the Bauhaus manifesto. Even the teaching program was based on this. The outside meant the preliminary course, the famous preliminary course, where you would learn just colour. What's colour theory? What colours are stronger? Which colours go together? And you'd learn a bit of science too, optics, how colour affects the human eye. And then you'd start to build these together, and you'd go into specialized groups then, color, the metal workshop, the wood workshop, stone, glass, etc. So you wouldn't necessarily be painter or sculptor, you'd have textiles, you would do, well today you probably do photography and new media, but then it all comes together in the middle. So you come from disparate, brought together, and Bao literally means building. It's the building, how you build this new modernity together, so that all these different technologies, different materials, different practices come together to build this new aesthetic vision. So a vision of modernity was not going to be just technological, just not a social issue, but it would be aesthetic too. It would be using aesthetic analogies to create a sort of harmonious life. The thing about the Bauhaus in practice was that it was always full of fighting internally. There was always a fight between the people who wanted art and thought art was becoming too utilitarian. So the very problem that Gropius wanted to resolve was the source of all the conflicts internally. The Bauhaus did achieve many great things. Lots of this chair, the Breuer chair, is still available today. But they also did a lot of experimental stuff. They had a lot of play. They had a lot of the woman there is wearing a mask from Oskar Schlemmer's theatrical productions, which were all about bringing all these elements together on stage. So dance, design, new music and jazz, productions of people like Paul Hindemith, all linked together. So it was a strange thing, but also externally it was always under pressure. Gropius, as the head professor, always had to go to meetings with the town council, with the government. There was always trouble. We understand these situations, always having negotiations. So he was fighting externally and internally. This quote here basically says that modernity is out of kilter. It's too much in the phrase of utility, and it gives not enough space for the aesthetic. So in a way, the problem is exactly the same problem that Williams will mention nearly 200 years later, almost 200 years later, 176 years. The same problem, but from Schiller's point of view, the problem is the aesthetic is being pushed out by utility, whereas Williams thought that the aesthetic had become too subjective. So we've been talking about this problem for 200 years, is my short answer to this. Utility versus aesthetic, productive, rationality versus creativity and innovation. There are two ways that this is being debated today. It's still being debated, so I'm not only just giving a history lesson, this argument is occurring today. The positive assessment relates to the creative economy. Remember I mentioned Richard Florida, the idea of the petty bourgeois of Enzensberger has now become the creative economy, creative class. And then you have the negative assessment that you have the art and utility have disappeared. It's no longer utopian, but it's achieved. Art and utility have disappeared. Everything's design, everything's utility, and there's no space for critical. It's disappeared. And this is a negative assessment of this process. What I would argue is they're both symptoms of this anxiety about resolving this perennial problem. The division was never solved, so you end up today still with utopian and dystopian analyses. It's not something you could say happened in early modernity, it's occurring today. The nightmare scenario, the negative one, is by famous American art historian Hal Foster. He wrote in a book called Design and Crime. It's a play on an essay by Adolf Loos called Ornament as Crime. And he says today, the aesthetic and the utilitarian are conflated, they're brought together, but they're subsumed in the commercial and everything, not only architectural projects and art exhibitions, but everything from jeans to jeans, it's a pun, They sound exactly the same in English. Genes that you wear and genes in your DNA, they're all part of design. It's just like we design ourselves now. We're going to go into our DNA and find out, get the right thing, get our eyebrows fixed up, and we can remodel ourselves. But everything's part of this sort of new future where there's no outside to it. What Foster is worried about is there's no critical distance. You get this progressively asceticized regime of global spectacle. And he says the art world has become part of it. It's internalized the global. The irony, of course, is that Foster originally, he starts off his critical career as being an advocate of the anti-aesthetic. He said that the problem is art is it's too aesthetic, it's too harmonizing. Then now he's found that the aesthetic has disappeared and he wants to defend it, which makes it very difficult, because how does he defend the aesthetic on what ground? What is the value of the aesthetic if it's disappeared in the commercial world? And that's a problem for Foster. So it's a new totalitarian system for him, but it's a global system. The positive assessment, I guess, is with creative industries approach. What they argue is that once exclusively cultural activities are now productive economic activities. So that again, it's the same issue. What's formerly aesthetic, creative, now becomes part of the culture. It's economic and useful. So they've become central to economic vitality. The new creative economy is based on information communication technologies. It's often shortened to ICT. It's a lot of say in one mouth. Information communication technology. It deals with evolutionary economics and the idea of cultural democratization. It argues that the features of this are the new network market. The opposition of the economic and the cultural has been resolved. So again, the analysis is the same thing that was worrying Williams and Gropius and Schiller, the division between art and utility. It's the same issue, but it's a more positive thing, and now it said it's been resolved. We've fixed this problem. You may well know this, but I just thought I'd put it in for you. The network society, what is the definition of this? The creative economy approach really borrows from Manuel Castells, and his argument was these points. The key parts of a network economy, that is what we're in today, a network society, sorry. Information is the raw material. New technologies are everywhere. That is, they're pervasive. Three, the system is networking. But he says networking produces unpredictable events and it creates greater complexity. Castells is not always as straightforward as the creative industries sort of approach that Justin and I are used to, their reading of him. He says the point is that it's often four, unprecedented flexibility. Five, convergence. A convergence of different media. They're brought together more and more, and this is where things are heading ever greater. So technologies get brought together into a highly integrated system. And Castell says a global economy is different then from a world economy. And the reason he says it's different is because the global economy is able to work as one unit in real time on a planetary scale. So whether you're in Shanghai or New York or Sydney, Sao Paulo, this is a planetary system. Those elements of the economy, like the stock market, are integrated as one unit, and they all work on a global scale. One goes up, the other goes down, etc. They're more or less linked. Just back to the creative industries approach to generation of creativity, it argues that why it's different is because there's a first generation creativity. The emphasis was on the aesthetic as mysterious, serendipitous, exceptional individuals, experiences of painful creativity, a fragile flower. What they say is second generation creativity, what's happening today, is that creativity is about problem solving. It doesn't come from nothing. It's about addressing a problem, fixing it, potential of everyone. So what it does is bring in a new sort of idea of the collective, but the collective now is a network. So it goes back from an individual to a collective. It repeats the Raymond Williams analysis. And it's not surprising, some arguments of this come from cultural studies, where Williams is background. So they perpetuate the same sort of problem about the individual work, the collective. The focus is on remaking and reworking. It's cross-disciplinary, but there's only one impediment, that is the hyper-specialisation of education. Today, education gets more and more specialised, humanities get divorced from the science and technology and engineering, and these need to be brought together again. This argument goes back to Schiller as well. Schiller's big complaint was that modernity creates hyper-specialisation. I'd just like to mention a few problems with this positive approach. It's very teleological, that is, it leads also, the classic idea we're mentioning, it's a progressive line. The line that leads from some point A and is leading to this future. The elements of this are you focus on the digital over the analog, the virtual over the real, and affirmation, it's an affirmative analysis, so it wants to see the positive sides of these changes. It never looks back, there's no history, no art, and in some cases it's anti-art, not all, but it favours low over high art, and then in a way it creates another division by doing that. It sees art as critical but not affirmative. So it creates a utility aesthetic or utility art division. Okay, I'm just finishing up now. I just want to quickly say how I approach this. I think the problem of whether you're positive or negative about this is all part of the same problem. First question is, why have we been talking about this for 200 years? We want to talk about the same aesthetic, practical, utilitarian matters. They constantly reappear, the same problem. And why does it keep appearing and why does it keep surviving every analysis that wants to finish it? The key thing we probably have to think about now is that the grand scheme of modernity, which really comes from the Enlightenment, Enlightenment develops the idea of critique, but thought that critique should finish at some point and then we would stabilise and have something that's even more stable than tradition. So far, it's never worked out this way. It's not worked out this way today. So we need to think about some different way about how this dynamism works. Maybe one way of thinking about it is that the disconnect, the dynamism between different tensions, is actually what we need in society. This is what is fundamental to this sort of culture we live in. There's a Hungarian philosopher called Georgi Marcus who argues that modernity is not really a question of high and low culture, but what it does is produce a tension. Traditional culture doesn't go away, or traditional cultural ideals. There's collective culture, shared culture, general culture, customs. We find customs all the time when we meet new cultures. Certain things we are customary for us. You meet a person from another culture, you want to introduce yourself, you're not sure how to do it. Even clinking glasses can be difficult. Different cultures want where you look in the eye, etc., when you go to toast. These are all customary parts of the culture. They haven't disappeared. Marcus says it's better to think about these as specific and generic culture. Generic is our customs. The specific is where innovation, creativity occurs. And this is what modernity introduces. It's constantly evaluating and re-evaluating accepted norms. There's a willingness to explore new parameters, not just in science, but experimenting with different ways of doing things. You know, when I mentioned Polka before, and he's doing things about showing things about mediums and stuff, he was interested in different states of subjectivity. So it's different ways of thinking about even how we work as individuals. The big change then is the cultural practices that differ from traditional culture say that they're not God-ordained or even natural. They don't come from God, they're not natural. And once you decide they're man-made, then their activities you can remake. Okay? We make them, we can remake them. Okay? This is simply what it means. In modernity, there's this idea that our culture can be remade. So Marx's point is here, we need this element of culture because we need to refresh our ideas. If we collapse them into, and this is my argument, if we resolve this point where this tension that we've been talking about is resolved, we lose that part of the culture we need as a provocation. And it can't just be affirmative, it needs to be critical as well. So we have generic culture, that is traditional concepts, they're generic, they're anthropological, non-biologically fixed human behaviour, they're meaning-bearing, they're meaning-sharing, we share these ideas. They're symbolic practices, mutually understandable. That hasn't gone. We still have these. This is the argument. These aspects of the culture we still have. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to communicate with anybody. They change from culture to culture, though, which shows us that they are made according to different cultures, different times, for different reasons. Modernist culture, then, is the specific culture. I would say not high culture, but specific. It is socially disembedded. This is probably going back to Enzensberger's point about the petty bourgeoisie. It's very hard to find the social connection. What he means by disembedded is that it emphasizes autonomy and creativity is original. This happens in science. Why is Einstein famous? He came up with a new idea. Same reason why artists or why Mozart is famous, because he had new ways of thinking about and performing music. Okay? So this idea of originality is very different from the idea that traditional culture, you do a practice as best as it was done before and you try to keep it going. The difficulty is it initiates this complex unresolved tension. Art and the social are connected, but they're also slightly different. It introduces individual expression and community concession, transgression, and the question. Some questions we don't really ever have a fixed answer for. What is the role of dissent? What is the role of responsibility? These things come up all the time, these questions. The question is, should it be resolved? That's my argument. It shouldn't be resolved because we need these counterbalances, and they don't actually simply balance in any simple way. When you push a system, it's no clear-cut way that you overstep responsibility. Some artists may push something and they go too far in questioning certain areas of sexuality and so forth. There is always this push and pull between these things that happen.